Hey, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Greg, and I'm an addict. And I am truly humbled by the opportunity to come to speak to the topic of Meaning Makers Make It. This is my first workshop, so I'm definitely nervous, you know what I mean? But I believe that my higher power has given me an assignment. You know, I believe that he did this for me so I can get back into connection with him. Because over the last few days or so, I did more praying than I have ever done in the last month or so. But I'm going to keep coming back because the program of Narcotics Anonymous works, and you talk about miracles beyond measure. I am a miracle standing here today. Last month, I just celebrated 10 years clean. 10 years clean. They talk about double digits, right? 10 years clean, double digits, all that. But guess what? The other double digit was it took me 20 years to get to 10, right? So I had to keep coming back, keep coming to the meetings to hear something that I could identify with, because I had all the answers to everything, right? So I know what I needed was a change of heart, I needed a change of mind, and I needed a change of spirit. And I couldn't get that anywhere else. I thought I could find it in the drugs, I thought I could find it in the women, I thought I could find it in the gambling, and just nothing worked. Absolutely nothing worked. And I remember, I've had multiple treatments, right? Been to about four treatments. But I remember my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I came out of this treatment, I asked a guy to sponsor me, he said, yeah. So he would come pick me up and take me to these literature meetings, right? And then we were doing the It Works How and Why. So first thing I had to do is sit through the readings, right? I'm like, why we got to read all this stuff? What are they talking about? Not having a clue about what everything was going on, what was going on. And having to sit through the literature meeting, I didn't want to be there. All I wanted to do was him to drop me back off so I can go finish getting high, right? That's all I really wanted to do. I never knew that the readings were so important to the meeting. I never knew that that, to me, is like the heartbeat. That what kicks it off for me, right? And as he continued to come pick me up, I just didn't want it. Point blank, I wanted to go finish using, right? So I took my will back, gave back that little 5-6 months. I said, I'm going to go back and do what I want to do, because they just don't know how to use safely. They don't know just put like that much liquor and that much soda, or get this much of that for this much of that. But guess what, man? You know, I took a thorough beating out there. I played around with this thing entirely too long. And when I looked up and found out I couldn't live, it wasn't so much about living without the substances. I couldn't live within my own self. And that goes back to my childhood. I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. Grew up around a bunch of pimps and hustlers and all that, and the caddies. And that's when, back in the 60s, they had the vests and all that. So I saw that and I was attracted to that. But in the household, we couldn't speak. There was no such thing as no communication. A child was to be seen and not heard. And trust me, my father came from Mississippi, and he was not having it. He grew up in another era. So we couldn't express ourselves at all. Really, it was do as we say or suffer the consequences, right? So I acted out in school. I had a bad temper. I was fighting the teachers, and suspended in first grade, and it went on and on. It was crazy, and but they want the teacher, man. Yeah, the teacher. And trust me, when I got home, I got what I deserved. And I remember picking up that first drug. I was in third grade. I started smoking cigarettes, right, hanging around older people, and that really wasn't for me. And the parents used to have two bars in the house. So I would come home from school, I'm talking about third or fourth grade, that's where they had the JB and the Cutty Sock. But I would be sipping on that stuff, nasty as it was, but I just wanted to escape. I didn't even want to be in my own house. I didn't like my parents because I didn't get what I wanted. Whatever I saw in Johnny's lunch pail, that's what I wanted. And whatever, if he brought that remote control to school, guess what, I'm still in that car. Because what you got is what I wanted. I had no identification. I had an issue with growing up with a twin. I had an issue with my sister above me being daddy's little girl and my brother being the mama's boy. So that left me in the middle with almost nothing of what I felt. And that's what I felt on the inside. So I remember staring out of my bedroom window, saying, I got to get out of here. I just wanted to leave, right? And so I had to find an escape. And then once maybe got a little bit older, right, my father said, hey, go in there and get me a beer out of the refrigerator. You know, take it to him. He said, take a sip, right? That's a little bit. By the time he get it, it'd be halfway gone, right? And I'm talking about being 11 to 12, and they send us to some of the better schools, and I went to a Catholic school for a long time, though I was raised Baptist. I know this is NA, but this is my story. And they allowed me to be a server. Why did they give me access to the wine, right? And we would have to go set up, and we would be drinking that wine, and I'm like, what the heck? I wasn't even out of eighth grade, right? And after that, by the time I got 14, I was a straight alcoholic, right? Straight alcoholic, straight addict, right? Because I was drinking liquor, smoking weed. By the time 16, I was a pill popper. I like that speed, I like to go. Things got to move. If it ain't moving, I'm going to make it move. And that's how I rolled for a long, long time. Found myself getting married at a young age, going in the military, and gave that all away, right? I didn't want to be with my children no more. The wife had to go because she was in the way. She was in the way of me and my partner. And I thought that it was just issues, right? But it was my issues. It wasn't her issues. Looked up, 25 years old, got these divorce papers in the mail, bet, you gone, cool, that's the end of my issue. But what I found out at 26, they diagnosed me with pancreatitis at 26. I had drank so much and used so much of that cocaine and all that, I had tore myself up by the time I was 26. You're talking about ulcers, bleeding, loss of weight, all that, but I didn't have a problem, right? So they sent me to these outpatient programs. I was going, and I just still didn't surrender to this program, right? I didn't want to surrender because what I thought that I was getting in the drug, I wasn't getting, right? But it came to a point in time that the drugs didn't work no more, right? By the time I go to this first treatment and this second treatment and this third treatment, man, I looked up. I had had been homeless. I think by the time I came in, I was 145 pounds, about to lose the job. I was homeless, and I was just sick and tired from being sick and tired. And so I knew it was time for me to do something different. But I always remember one thing. I remember y'all kept telling me, keep coming back. So even though I had left the rooms, I had given up on life, given up on myself, I knew if nothing else just worked, that was inside my gut. That was inside my soul. I said, if I can stay clean for 3 days, then I know I'll be able to get back. And it just so happened that the bottom was I was going to go rob a liquor store. And I had done a lot of different things, man. I had loan sharks, cashing checks, the damn state's attorney looking for me because I got all these bounce checks with these check cashing places, right? $50,000, $60,000 in debt. I'm like, damn, I'm at the end of my road, right? And so I said, I'm going to go rob this liquor store. So I robbed this liquor store, and that's it. Then I ain't going to do nothing else no more. But I didn't do it. I didn't rob the liquor store. What I did was I came home and prayed because I said, this is not me. I do a lot of different things, but trying to rob a liquor store without a weapon, talking about them snatch and grab. Where you going? He going to shoot you in the back, right? And I came home and I prayed because I remembered nothing else. I still had the literature. Crazy. I still had that works high and wide. It was all messed up around the edges, right? But I knew it worked, so I picked up the phone. And I had some hope by just looking at that book that I never even opened up. So I was able to go into a treatment, and that was the best thing that had happened to me. I got clean in the almost heaven area of Narcotics Anonymous, right? I was able to get the hell off the streets, get out of D.C., and go somewhere and get some help. But I had to surrender. Y'all tell me, find a sponsor, do some steps, go to meetings. Right? I said, go to meetings. Man, I got to go back to them things again. Those ain't going to help me, right? But what I realized was that, Greg, that's where your help is at. That's where you get clean. All y'all were clean. All y'all were smiling. Y'all was blinging. I wanted it. I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So I got the sponsor. And what drew me to him was between himself, his sponsor, and the grand sponsor, they had 80-something years clean. I said, I want what they have. I'm going to hook a crook. I'm going to do what he tells me to do. But when it came to the point of call me every day, read this such and such, I had an issue with that, right? And I love him to death, Irish dude, but he stayed in my ass, point blank, day by day. Stop bullshitting, read the literature, call me every day like I told you to do. Now, the first guy who told me all that, I wanted to fight. You know, you're not talking to me like that. But I had to get humble because what he told me to do, and one thing he taught me was how to clear my mind. He said, you got to get rid of all that chatter, all that stuff that's in your mind because you think you have the answer to everything. So I had to let go, let God to help me to get to where I needed to be. Left there, stayed up there for a little bit, went to an Oxford house. That helped, and it was time to come back. Now, the job I came back to was the Postal Service. And that's where I got all everything I wanted was right there at work, right? And but I had to do something different. So I move in with a buddy of mine who's still using. He's still tricking, right? I'm going to my meetings. I'm getting my messages, doing the step work, doing what my sponsor told me to do. But the kicker with the sponsor piece was he told me, find another sponsor. I'm not going to sponsor you from West Virginia, and you living in D.C. Find yourself another sponsor. So what I found out, what happened is the dude I was living with was using. I didn't want to be around in the house. So I spent more time out the house on the NA hotline talking to somebody who could help me with my problem because I didn't want to use, right? So now I'm staying somewhere. I can't even live because this dude is using. And God put people in my life where I finally got out of their house and I was able to take it one day at a time, continue to go to meetings, continue to do the work. You know, I've been in, I'm gonna say I've been 10 years clean now, but meeting makers make it because we got to make the meat. Meeting makers make it because this is the plural part. The plural part is the makers, right? You are the makers. Meeting makers make it. So I had to come in and listen to you all to get some instructions and some things I really didn't even want to hear. Some things I didn't even want to do. Not be able to take your, constructive criticism. That's what I call it. Because I know everything, right? And so, but I believe in the program, right? And I believe in the program Narcotics Anonymous so much that I asked two other addicts to help start a meeting. They said, Greg, it's going to be a lot of work, but I had read the pamphlet on the group and got the IP, the group, and I know about the ups and downs and things like that, but I had never knew that it was that much work. And see, my issue was, I didn't start doing service work in Narcotics Anonymous until like 4 years ago. I got 10 years clean. So I'm coming to meetings, but really I ain't doing no work. I'm not doing no service work. I'm not going to no area service. I'm not doing the business meeting. I'm not doing the group conscious, right? I'm not hanging out where the winners are. I'm just coming in, get my little piece, leave you over there, leave me alone, and I'm going out the door, right? But I also knew that in a matter of time, if I didn't continue to come to meetings, if I didn't continue to hear something, no matter if I did the service piece or not, I knew it was just a matter of time before I picked up and used, right? And so with that service position, it got me closer to my higher power. I learned more about Narcotics Anonymous, right? And I'm learning more day by day, you know, and it's a blessing. I don't ever want to get back out of service, you know what I mean? Because that is the lifeline. Meeting makers make it. Meeting makers make it by coming up and showing up. Right, sharing my experience and the hope about what I have been through, right, and the things that I've been able, you know, to achieve through the rooms. Because if I was still high, I would have been dead a long, long time ago, and that's point blank. For me, an addict like me, there is no light way to recover or no things like this. It's either do or die, because that's how I roll. That's how I roll, period, right? And so being able to get back in service and to help myself, am I able to get in contact with God, my understanding, and understanding what my purpose is. And I made a decision back in 2009 to go back to school, right? I said, okay, I'm going to go back to school because I liked what I saw some things in treatment. I said, okay, I want to be this drug and alcohol counselor. So an addict got some information from another addict for me to go get those hours I had to do this beach addiction counselor thing. And right now I am a clinical addictions counselor, right? And I do that for me. I do it pro bono. I don't work for no treatment facility or nothing. It's if I can meet an addict in the street, my first thing in my office is NA. So I'm saying? I run across a lot of people with a lot of issues, but this is what I know is what works. My higher power has also led me to go back to school. So I got my associates, I went directly to my associates, to the bachelor's, and went directly to the bachelor's, to my master's. So I'm in my master's degree right now, working to be a clinical addiction, not a clinical addictions counselor, but a clinical social worker. But guess what? I'm failing, right? I'm like, oh my God, now I did. I've been in school 6 years straight, right? Grinding, God opened up a lot of doors because I'm clean, but now I'm failing. So now I want to run. So now I'm the little boy looking out this window, like, how the hell am I going to get out of this and still try to keep some of these benefits that they give me to go to school, right? How am I going to do this? Shit, you got to open up the book first, Brad. You got to put the work in. You got to put the work in. I got to put the work here in the rooms, right? And so they tell me, hey, drop the class, get the W, on and on. No, I'm not quitting. I'm not going to quit. If this is what I have to do to get better, then that's what I'm going to have to do. If you got to give me a C or D, because we're in that master's joint, that's what you get, that's failing, then that's what it is. But the program doesn't teach me to quit. The program teaches me to be responsible for my part in what I play, right? If I choose to get lazy when I get at this level, whose fault is it? It's not my wife's fault. It's damn sure not the damn professor's fault, right? It's my fault. So I can accept these things today. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous had taught me, is acceptance for what I do, right? Acceptance for me. Let me be okay for where I am. Let me be happy for a change, right? I never wanted no happiness. I never knew what it was. I never knew what it was to communicate with people. See, y'all taught me that in the rooms, because when we get in that business meetings, I be wanting to change formats. Hey, I got a brand new idea. I had a brand new idea last week. Hey, y'all, let's change it from a 1-2-3 tradition to step meetings. And all the mother seven addicts said, no, Greg, we ain't changing the format, because hey, you want the format changed. You got to ride with the program. You got to ride with us, you know. So, but I don't have an issue with that no more today. But before, back in the day, I would have that issue, right? But the program of Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life, and the meetings have saved my life. And I never thought that I would really need the meetings, because we come in and we share all our business. But when last year, my wife and I, we didn't come to the convention. We said, okay, we're going to go to Florida. Went to Florida, right? Got into a little argument, right? On the way back. Yeah, a little argument, right? I'm never going to Florida again in April. I'm going to be right down here, right? So, As 2014 was tumultuous, because by the time I came back, I said, that's it, I'm leaving. So I made the decision to get a divorce. I said, I'm leaving, right? The year goes on, I'm gone. I wasn't sharing no meetings. I ain't calling no sponsor. I didn't pray to God. I ain't talking to nobody, right? The year went on terrible. By the time November came, January, I'm gone. Called the church, called the pastor. Pastor, I'm leaving the church. Either she go or I go. Right? But no way we can coexist here together. Right? So do y'all want counsel? No, I don't want no counsel. I made a decision. Right? And so as I looked at the decision, I saw the pain on her face, and I wasn't sharing about it. It got to a point where I had to share about it in the meeting. Right? So now I'm exposed. Some things that I hold and did so private, sitting there sick as my secrets, is killing me. And when I had looked at it, and I talked to my sponsor. Me and my sponsor, it's me. We go up and down. So I know where to find him. So I go to the meeting at 8 o'clock. He just looks at me. He just said, pick up the phone. He already knew it was a problem, because I don't keep in contact with him until something pops up, right? He said, if you'd have picked up the phone, you might not be in a situation where you're at. So now if I trust in this program, or I trust in what you've all been teaching me for these last 20 years, right, do I got enough faith in the program to put for the most important thing, which is my marriage? So I'm like, but damn, Greg, now you got a lot of people who you affected, right? The rooms and other family members and things like that. So I had to go back to that second step to get back into some sanity, right? I had to make sure that what I was doing was for the right reason. What I found out, and when I did some step work, was that woman didn't do nothing for you, to you. You know what I mean? You made the decision to try to make, this is what I'm telling myself, right? Praying to God. You made those decisions. And after I put down the list, there was absolutely no reason to leave. So I wanted what I wanted, and I didn't know what it was. I didn't want to do the right thing, right? So I like that chaos. I like that upheaval. I like walking into places and make stuff happen when I say make it pop. But it don't happen like that in the marriage. It don't happen like that on a job. So it's not going to happen nowhere else, right? So nowhere. So when meeting makers, see, I'm able to come in here and talk about that, right? A couple years ago, I had an issue of depression. I have that proclivity towards that depression, but I never had it since I've been in the rooms. And about a couple years ago, I was locked down, depressed, in the bed, couldn't move, right? And I said, how the hell am I going to get out of this? I came to meetings. That's what helped me to go along the way. The meeting makers make it because we come in here and share about really what's going on with me. I'm able to come in and hear about you all, come and share your things because I need what you got so I can put it on the shelf so I can use it, right? And part about the meeting maker maker is leaving that door open for the newcomer that comes in. When that young lady came up and shared, she said, hey, I'm a newcomer. She read the readings, and she where? She's sitting on the front row. If you would tell me sitting in the front row, I'd be out the door, waiting until 15 minutes before the meeting before I walk in, right? But the blessing is, I was with Thursday, knew we had to drive down here Friday, but knowing I had my commitment on Thursdays at 7. So a brother called me and said, great man, can you give me a ride? I'm like, damn. Now I got to go opposite of my house, then pass my house, get back to the meeting. All right, brother, I'm going to come get you. Because you know why? The brother said, man, I ain't been to a meeting in a week. I need a meeting. All right, bro, I'll be here to get you. I'm trying to get him. Phone rings. What is this, Greg, man? You going to meet? Yeah, man, I'm going. He says, man, can you pick me up? Okay, I'll be there in 10 minutes. So be there at such a time. So I pick that brother up, and we go to the meeting. Right? See, meeting makers make it because we do it for each other. I can't do this by myself, right? I got to be able to come in front of y'all and expose some things that I didn't want to expose, right? Get up here and talk about how Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life. Because I can't do this. I don't plan to go nowhere, you know what I mean? And just one day at a time, I pray to God. He gave me a beautiful day today. It's beautiful down here today, right? I've heard what I need to hear in these workshops. I'm going to get it in. And how God lets me know he's real is January was when I was supposed to have moved, right? January, I started to get these little symptoms. Come February, I'm sitting at my desk. I'm about to die. I'm feeling like, God, I'm about to die. What the hell is going on? I go to the doctor, and they pull my blood sugar. My blood sugar is 592. Yeah, 590. He's like, you about to go into a coma. Next thing I know, they got the needles coming and the IVs. I'm in the hospital 6 hours, right? I'm coming out of there with cholesterol medicine, high blood pressure, heart medication, what else? High blood, diabetes, a whole 9 yards. I'm like, what the fuck? Then I got to go be at the meeting at 7 o'clock, and I'm a speaker coming at 7, right? So now I got this commitment, right, to keep the door open for somebody. And I look sick. I lost 20 pounds off the break like that. Not knowing I was even sick, I'm like, how long? I know last year I had my physical, it was this. This year is that. What happened? I don't know, but God said, hey, look, who's in charge, right? Find a way to manage this. Find a way to come back to me this way. And my whole life has changed. I want to thank the region for having me to come out. My name is Greg. I'm an addict, and I'm going to keep coming back.